Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the broth lady or the inventor of the hashtag more vegetables than a vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, and the upcoming Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size and self-love and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Valentine of thepaleomom.com. I'm the New York Times best-selling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I am doing really well. I'm like crazy busy, but I'm like, it's more now, it's like busy things that I've been wanting to work on for ages. And so even though I'm not necessarily feeling all of the free time that I'd like to be feeling, I'm like having so much fun with the stuff that I'm doing. And so it's making me feel all like happy and chipper and like this. can you hear it? Can you hear the woo?
That's I've had to like turn my microphone down. Because yes.
There's too much happy, as my kids would say, jazzy.
Yeah, you probably have jazzy hands jazzy. Over there.
They do, right. But my kids have both started using that word, and I don't know where they got that word from, but they've been like, that's jazzy! And they do, like, jazz hands, and it's adorable, so I've just been rolling with it.
You evidently are probably also in a good mood because you're filling up your home with pets.
Yes! We now have 16, well, as of tomorrow, we will have 16 pets. Now...
Just I do so a lot, just for the record.
Just so people understand, 12 of them are fish and 2 of them are snails, and they all live in one aquatic environment. So it's kind of like having 3 pets if you consider the fish tank to be all one. But since every single creature in the fish tank has a name, although there are 4 Ellas, so we have 5 neon tetras, and we can tell the boy, but all the 4 girls look the same. So we call the boy Bob, and we call all 4 girls Ella. So I don't know how to count them exactly. But yeah, they all have a name. Therefore, we were doing – are your kids old – like, did they hit Sandra Boynton? Are you familiar with the 15 Animals Sandra Boynton book?
I don't know what that is.
So Sandra Boynton's a contemporary children's author, and she did like – Hippos Go Berserk and Tickle Time and Snuggle Puppy. And she's got a whole pile of them. She's got CDs and they're like awesome. So your kids are probably just old enough that you probably missed them with Cole and then never got into them. But we hit it just perfect. And there's a fairly recent book called 15 Animals. And the rhyme is like the first 14 animals are all named Bob. And the last one's named Simon James Alexander Ragsdale III, and there's this like huge rhyme to get to that punchline of they're all Bob except for this last one that has this crazy long name that has enough names for 5 animals. And so my kids were like counting up the number of animals yesterday before we decided to adopt number 16, and my youngest goes, we have 15 animals, and I go, oh, and only one of them is named Bob. And my kids just cracked up, like they got it, and it was the funniest thing I think I've ever said in their eyes, ever. I was like walking on water. I was so funny at that moment. But yeah, so we adopted a cat today from the Humane Society, and I should be able to bring her home tomorrow. I wasn't able to bring her home today. But she, it's interesting because she's, so my local pet store where we've been going to buy all of the various fish and accoutrements for our fish tank, has a area that's cats, but they're Humane Society cats. They're not actually like pet store cats. And they don't have pet store cats at this pet store, which is good because there's ethical issues with pet store cats. And this one cat like caught my eye when we went in like over a month ago for the very first time to buy the fish tank. And so we've been in the pet store a lot since then because you do that with fish because you sort of like slowly add, you know, two or three fish at a time. And every time we go in, I've sort of like visited with this cat and, you know, said hello. And she's just been, she's so sweet and she's so clean and she's very interactive. And there's something about her that I just really, really like. And when we were there on Saturday, someone else was looking at her and she's just this tiny little thing. She's the same size as the 6-month-old kittens that they have right now. And so someone else was looking at her. And then as we were getting ready to leave with our fish, the Humane Society volunteer was putting her back into the back room where the cages are. And I said something like, you know, oh, like nobody took her. Like, I'm really surprised. And so then I got more of the story behind this cat. And she's 4 years old. So even though she's like as tiny as a kitten, she's an adult cat. And they just have so much more trouble finding homes for adult cats than they do for kittens. Like everybody wants a kitten and nobody wants an adult cat. Because when you get an adult cat, like you get what you get. And there's not as much opportunity to sort of mold their personality and their development and, you know, teach them rules and things like that. So with an adult cat, it's more challenging. And I've adopted adult cats before. So I sort of have an idea of how that goes. And it can be great, but it can be also, you know, you get all the quirks. So you just get a complete package. And so we got talking more about this cat. And, you know, everything that she was saying made me really feel even more like she'd be a really good fit for us, especially because I have a cat already. And there were certain personality traits for a second cat that were really important to me. And so not only, you know, was she, you know, sort of more and more fitting that bill, but it turns out that they've been having a really, really hard time placing her because she's an adult cat and she hasn't been doing well lately. Like she's stopped eating as much and she's started exhibiting some anxiety behaviors and they're really worried about her. And so to me, it was just like, I've been watching this cat every time I go into the pet store for a month. Like she just really caught my eye more so than any other cat. And so we went back today and I brought my girls and we went and we really just cuddled with her and visited with her and just kind of, you know, got to know her without like a glass wall in between us. And, she's basically perfect. So I signed all the adoption paperwork and, she has to get microchipped and then we'll be able to take her home. So hopefully we'll be able to bring her home tomorrow evening and then we'll have to deal with the slow, gradual introduction of a new cat into the house, which will take a few days, but yeah, so I'm really excited and I really feel like, you know, I just kind of felt like it was meant to be. So, and she's a sweetheart. She's so tiny.
Well, congratulations. What's her name? Bob?
It's not going to be Bob. I think we're going to call her Tilly. Humane Society have been calling her Kit Kat. And it's a cute name, but it doesn't really suit her. So I think right now the front runner name is Tilly, followed closely by Dark Rainbow Sparkle Star, which is what my 5-year-old's campaigning for. And I just said, I don't think she looks like a Dark Rainbow Sparkle Star. Plus, not quite sure what we'd call her for short. But yeah, so I think at the moment it's going to be Tilly, but I think we'll probably bring her into the house and see what her personality really is like once she, you know, calms down into a new environment. And there's no rush. She might just end up being kitty for a while, but yeah. So I'm excited. I posted a picture on Instagram. So if anybody's listening to this and they didn't see a picture on Instagram, granted, by the time this airs, I'm guessing I will have posted like 12 more pictures of my new cat and my cats together, probably, hopefully by then. So just go to my Instagram and look up. I'll have to think of some cutesy handle to look for specifically pictures of my new cat, because that's what paleo people do. They think of cutesy handles for their cats.
Hashtags galore.
And hashtags. But yeah, so I'm excited, and I feel, you know, I've been since my old man cat passed away almost exactly a year ago. He passed away Christmas Eve last year. So ever since then, I've sort of known that I wanted to get a second cat. I really like the dynamic of two cats. It's just been waiting for the right time. So I don't know exactly if this was the right time, but it just kind of felt like the stars aligned and we're going to have two kitties again.
Well, congratulations.
Yo.
So while you were off filling your house with a lot of living creatures this weekend, I was busy enjoying the creatures I already have. So Saturday we went to, first of all, Friday I worked out. Like, I legit did like a workout that, you know, was really super intense and not just like, hey, let me pick up heavy things in my gym, which was good. Viv and I are back to podcasting on Strong One Radio, and she came over and trained with me on Friday, so that was good. And then Saturday, the boys and I went with my mom to where her parents are buried in Arlington National Cemetery and did Raise the Cross Across America, which is like a volunteer foundation that provides wreaths for all of the veteran tombstones, graves.
Gravestones.
People who are buried. We'll go with that. And it was a really great experience. And the boys walked like probably at least 3 miles, because the Arlington National Cemetery is really big.
It's huge, yeah.
And we had to kind of park far away because there were a lot of people doing it. And they didn't complain one time. Like, they were into it as well, and that was really awesome. And then while we were kind of down in the D.C. area being festive, we went to the National Tree, and we were supposed to see Santa and Santa's workshop. But evidently Santa was very sick. I don't know if he had, you know, the flu or perhaps something worse. I hope he doesn't need a blood transfusion, because that'll take time over Christmas. But he wasn't there, and the elves had actually gone to check on him to make sure everything was okay as well. So the boys did not get to see Santa or the elves.
That's intense.
It was really intense. And we stood in line to find out that they weren't in the workshop, but we got to see the workshop unattended, which was kind of exciting, and they got to sit in Santa's chair without Santa, which they thought was also fun. So,
and probably super special. Probably not many kids get to do that.
Right. And there was definitely like a video recording or something in there, so they still like told Santa what they wanted while he was in the pool.
Perfect.
And could, you know, watch. So and then we went out to, first of all, we did that with our Jewish friends, which is hysterical, but it's like an experience to go to the National Tree and do that kind of stuff. So that was fun. But Jennifer and her family from Predominantly Paleo went with us, and then we went out to brunch. And while I was out that way, I went to a Whole Foods, and I don't know if it's just a special Whole Foods because it was in the city or if they have this at all Whole Foods, but I found this special food dye. Oh gosh, now I won't remember what the name of it is. Natural Colors or something? I don't know. We'll put a link in the show notes and I'll look it up later and tell Monica. But it totally inspired. Well, I had a bunch of inspiration for an event that we had Sunday, and the food dye was one of them. But it was a really great food dye. Is like the only natural food dye I've ever used where the pigmentation was actually really deep and good, and it was 100% from, you know, beets and greens, and it was interesting because when you tasted the different color icings, they all tasted different. Like the red and the green were completely different tasting because it had come from real food sources. But yeah, so the boys and I experimented with that on Sunday. But Saturday, there was... Okay, so you will appreciate this, Sarah. Evidently, mm-hmm. there is a comet that lost its ice like years and years ago. And every year around Christmas, it comes back around to Earth's atmosphere. And there's epic meteor showers. And it's called the Geminids. And I was in the nail salon on Saturday, and they had the volume turned off, but the news program was on. And so I saw the this thing come up that said, you know, epic stargazing tonight, the Geminids. And I thought that it just meant, like, I thought that that was referring to the Gemini constellations. And so I told Matt that we should go out in the hot tub and watch the stars, because it was supposed to be really good stargazing. And we have great... our neighborhood doesn't have a lot of streetlights, so we're able to see the stars very well. And so we're back there, and we're looking up in the sky, and literally like 30 seconds in, we start seeing like shooting star type things. And I've seen shooting stars like occasionally a couple of times, and Matt had never seen them at all. And we had no idea until we were like watching it that it was a meteor shower. And it was like one of the best experiences, like one of those like magical moments that you have in your life where you're like, oh my gosh, did you see that? Like, and another one and another one. Oh my gosh. And then afterwards we looked up what it was, and we found out that it happens every year around this time. And it just so happened that because of the way the moon was lit and because of like the sky being clear and whatever, whatever, it made for like perfect visibility. And the meteor is evidently slower than most meteors, so you're able to see it like go all the way across the sky. And it was really awesome. And then Sunday we had a paleo cookie swap whereby we made melting snowman cookies. I think we're going to call them melted snowman puddles. But a lot of people said that they look like Olaf in the summer cookies. yeah, I thought you'd appreciate that. And so we had like about a dozen people over for a paleo cookie swap, and everybody brought different kinds of cookies, which was so fun to be able to like taste different ones without having to make them yourself and from a variety of sites and all that kind of stuff. So we're going to blog about that this week. It'll be up by the time the podcast airs. But that was a lot of fun and a good way to kind of have a holiday party, I think. I think we will be doing that. We'll maybe make it an annual thing. The boys told me it was their favorite party we've ever had, and I'm sure that had nothing to do with the fact that there were, you know, 1,000 cookies in the house. But yeah. But like everybody brought cookies, and then they left with different kinds of cookies. And so the boys got to try a bunch of different kinds of cookies. And normally they would only be allowed to have like one or two cookies, and they had like five or something as they tried different cookies.
Last time I did a cookie swap was, I think, the year before I was paleo. And so I've never done a paleo one. I bet I have enough friends locally who would totally
do that with me. Well, I was surprised because I just joined this like local organics group, which is like basically a bunch of crunchy granola foodie moms that are all like into real food, Weston A. Price, paleo, like, you know, there's different kinds of people, but they're all into just like real clean.
I think you mentioned them last week, and I think I also said, that sounds really awesome.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
No, so, you're allowed to repeat yourself.
Okay. So anyway, these women were talking about it would be fun to do this. Let's plan it next year. And I was like, because we focus so much on simplifying our lives, it's one of the first times in like recent memory, if not years, that I looked at my calendar and I had like nothing planned for the weekend. And I was like, it was like Monday. And I was like, hey, how about if we have the cookie swap at my house? And if you can't come, we'll do another one next year, like was originally being planned. But I don't have anything going on if you guys want to come over. And it turned into like a thing and people came over and it was fun. And Ashley Beaver from Live in Paleo, who lives in California, was in town among many other people for the American Open, which is a weightlifting competition, USA weightlifting competition in DC. And so I picked Ashley up from the metro and Ashley came to the party and it was fun. You know, it was a lot of fun to like hang out with people and talk about.
And it's also one of those things that, I mean, at Cookie Swaps to me, like they're really fun, but they also are like the quintessential simplifying your holiday event, right? Like it's, you make one kind of cookie, you make a quadruple batch, and then you get 10 kinds of cookies or 12 kinds of cookies as a result. And so you go into the holiday season with like everything you need for the whole couple weeks of whatever, rather than what I've always done is make, right, like a batch of 10 different cookies. And that's so much more work. Although this year, oddly enough, I have not made a thing yet. Not one.
That's perfectly fine.
So I think part of it is we don't have any company coming this Christmas for the first time in a long time. And so it's just going to be us and our 16 pets for Christmas.
Just a few.
So
do you think that all 16 are going to make it to Christmas? This is the real question.
I think so. I've got the water chemistry thing down with the tank now. So I think I've got the fish tank figured out. We had a little overfeeding issue where I let my youngest daughter feed the fish, and I knew when she did it, it was like way too much, but I didn't really realize how important it is to scoop out all the extra food when that happens. And I just kind of let it slide. And then we lost Goldie, but the water chemistry is fixed. The fish are all looking extremely healthy. So I think they will all make it to Christmas, and I'm sure my kids will as well.
You've got 20 living creatures in your house.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's probably where you should cut it off.
I think we've got room for about 5 or 6 more fish in the tank. But I think I'm done with mammals or, yeah, warm-blooded creatures in general for a while. I think 2 cats and a fish tank is a pretty good level for us. So I want to talk about something that probably a lot of our listeners have already noticed, but something that I'm really, really proud of. And that has been because I mentioned like off the top of the show that I've been doing a lot of work, but it's been really fun work. And a lot of what I've been doing is really trying to bring to fruition a lot of these ideas I've had for my blog and for social media lately, which is to really like ramp up the resource aspect and really get much more into science education, health topics, and really ramp up the just useful, free, not behind a membership wall, like you just go to the website and download what you want and just have this great resource, and really, you know, trying to ramp up, to me, what the main point of this is providing people with the information and resources they need to take control of their health and improve their health. And it's something that I'm really, really passionate about, you know, and it feeds into all the other things, right? Like it's my passion for scientific literacy is part of my, you know, passion for, this health education and really being able to help people get the right information. And so I've been able to this week put a lot of time and effort into some new downloads, I always did, you know, very sciencey Facebook posts, but much more regular. And we've got some fun images to go with them now that people are really loving, and just really trying to be a resource first and foremost, and really help educate and be a great place for a great source of information that people can share. So, you know, when you're thinking of like, oh, I've got this friend who's interested in paleo. Oh, the paleo mom has great download about that. And I can just download and print off this 2-page thing for them. And really just have like a wealth of resources. So I've got like 300 ideas that I'll be working on, my team will be working on over the next forever, because by the time I've done those 300 ideas, I'll have 2,000 new ones. But that's really been the focus, and it's been so rewarding for me because the feedback has been amazing. And I just want to thank, there's like this huge like ramp up of people who are posting on my Facebook, just like basically messages that are like, thank you for being so awesome. And it's because people are so excited about these new resources and, you know, putting together, you know, they can see the effort that I'm putting into this. And, I love it when people tell me that kind of stuff. It really does make my day, and it really is great to see how much people are enjoying that. So for people who are like podcast listeners and don't necessarily go, you know, blogs or social media, where you can find this stuff. So I'm definitely getting more time to write really sciencey blog posts, and those are going to come out at about probably 3 a month right now. So there's a couple upcoming that I'm just putting the final touches on. And then I've got these much more sort of bite-sized science topics that are going up not quite every day, but most days on Facebook, and then they're getting reshared. If you're not a Facebook person, they're getting reshared on Twitter, and I've just figured out how to also get them up on Instagram and Pinterest. So no matter what kind of, you know, some people just don't like Facebook. So if you don't like Facebook, it's okay. If you're more of a Twitter person or more of an Instagram person, you're gonna be able to get access that scientific information and get to see some more of these things. And then the free downloads are all actually on the blog, and it's like thepaleomom.com/downloads. And you can go, and there's going to be more and more stuff, especially in the new year as we finish a lot of the like projects. I've got these like huge to-do lists. I want one about this, and I want one about this, and I want one about this. So I'm going to, you know, I write it, and then I give it to a member of my team to design it. And it's sort of then it all kind of comes together. And once it's ready, we just release it. There's no real deadlines. We just try and do it as they come. But I've been really excited about it, because to me, and I know that you feel very much the same way, Stacey, that's the primary goal, right? Like, we found paleo as solutions to our health. And for us, this whole journey is about being able to, you know, shout that from the rooftops and help other people, you know, find that same success and find, you know, find that same information so that they can take control of their own health. So it makes me feel just really content that I'm not working on a book. Therefore, I have time to actually really focus on this aspect of it, which makes me feel really good.
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I think that when we each started paleo, and we started up at various times, but, you know, many years ago, there were resources, but they were very limited. And we've each talked about how, you know, you were looking for more science, and that's what led you to kind of start your own blog and have it as an outlet for things that you were reading and finding. And we, on the opposite side of that coin, couldn't find a lot about how to do this as a family. And so, you know, when we saw health improvements as a family, we kind of wanted to share the recipes and things that were working for us. And I think that, you know, as each of, you know, as a lot of people in the community have grown and blogs have been created, there's a lot of really awesome information for a lot of people, both available for free resources in the internet that we all try to do. I mean, I was telling someone the other day, I think we have over 500 recipes in our blog, and then within our books, that makes 1,000 recipes, you know? So I feel like there's a lot more information and tools for people to succeed. And I think that, you know, for us, like you, we're finding the things that we really want to do rather than the things that kind of, I think, were natural and we got swept into, either because, you know, the people that we knew, or the, you know, what our friends were doing, or because a publisher said, what's your next book? And without thinking, do I want to do another book, we'd come up with a topic, you know. And that's not to say that that stuff isn't valuable and important and the stuff that we've done. I feel like for me, I kind of feel like I'm going through this like midlife crisis, both in a paleo aspect as well as a non-paleo aspect in my life, where I've gone through such a huge transformation in the last 5 years, both in like my regular day job career and then what's happened with the paleo thing. And my kids went from being nursing toddlers to now my 9-year-old and I have adult conversations together. Like, there's just been this huge shift in our life, and I'm personally finding myself really evaluating a lot of the things that are happening in my life and thinking like, okay, what is it that I want? Because I have the ability to put my life on the trajectory that I'm interested in. And I think that it's really valuable and important both to us personally as well as the community for us to get back to like, well, not back to, but for us to focus on the things that are really important and to make the time to do those things. So I too am grateful for the support that people have given, you know, encouragement from talking on the podcast about it or talking in media about, you know, a lot of people saying, oh yeah, right, you'll do X, Y, or Z again in a couple of weeks or whatever. But, to the people who kind of say to me, well, that's really great, like good for you, and you know, that kind of stuff, that positive reinforcement and encouragement is really wonderful and appreciated. And I think, you know, it's a lesson to us all in terms of, you know, providing that feedback for people when they share something about their life that, you know, probably needs some high-fiving. And I think we talked a lot about that in our Thankful podcast as well, just kind of like paleoing it forward, if it applies to your paleo life, but really just kind of being there and being, you know, helpful and appreciative of the things in your life and for what you can do for other people as well. Because for a lot of people, and I'm mainly talking about myself, you know, we are really have a wonderful life and are very lucky to have the things that we have. And there's a lot of things that I would like to do and years ago that we used to do, like volunteering and adopting families at the holidays and really giving back. And I think we personally decided to give back to the paleo community in a way that sucked a lot of that time for us. And so now has been like this full cycle reevaluation where I've kind of looked at, okay, this is important to me and I want to continue to do this, but I want to structure our lives in a way that allows us to do other things as well. So, you know, I think coming up with free resources or like, you know, for us, we're putting this bundle together, or, you know, we're focusing more on blog posts that we're really excited to write and get back to writing. I feel like we haven't had like hours and hours and hours to devote just to one blog post in a really long time, because we had so many kind of little blog posts, like not little blog posts, but we had like a number of blog posts, and with the limited time that we had, we couldn't then devote to creating like extensive blog posts. So the Tutorial Thursday series is really special for us, and we're excited to be able to do that. And you know, every time we do it, Matt and I literally like give each other a high five, and we're like, that was fun, like we really liked putting that together. You know, we learned
some resources.
Thank you. Like, we learned something in doing that, and I hope other people are learning by reading. And so it's fun to be able to get back to do that kind of stuff. And it was fun for sure to, you know, to write books and to do whatever, but for us personally, we're kind of at a point where we're like, okay, well, we did that and it was great, and we're ready to, you know, kind of think about what else we can do that gives value both, you know, to our lives as well as other people's lives. So I think it's important lesson for everybody to kind of, you know, make sure that you're living the life that you would like. I mean, I hate to sound like Oprah or something, but I don't know. I feel like I'm a little young for a midlife crisis, but I did have my kids and start work really early. Like all of my peers are about 10 years older. So maybe it's about right. I don't know. Like I went to dinner with someone and they were like, yeah, you know, got tattoos and want a new car and midlife crisis. I'm like, yeah, that's totally where I am at right now. I want a convertible, and I just, you know, got a big tattoo. I don't know. So
you really want a convertible?
I do. I want a hardtop convertible, but I'm not willing to give up my, I drive a Prius. I'm not willing to give up like hybrid, the benefits in this area of a hybrid, not to mention like the money that I save with gas. And so there aren't any hardtop convertible hybrids, I don't think. I've looked. So I'm just going to have to wait patiently until one exists. But I wanted to get a Mini Cooper. I wanted to get a Volkswagen Eos. Like, I went and test drove a Fiat. I don't know what I was thinking. And fortunately, our book tour came right smack dab in the middle of that desire. So I didn't actually move forward with anything. Yeah.
That's probably good. Yeah, no, the book tour definitely was like draining enough to remove motivation to take action on anything.
Exactly. It was the action for a while. Wow.
So, that was a long news and views, but it tis the season for lots of news, I think. So, I mean, anybody with the show notes can always have just fast forwarded through all of that. But we are actually going to do a show about coffee today. We did a podcast episode, was it a couple of months ago, on like paleo beverages and like what can you drink on the paleo diet? And that show was so popular that I think we've kind of had this idea to have more shows that are a little bit more of a return to basics and a return to, you know, some of these more like fundamental, like when you're first going paleo and you're trying to figure out if a food's working for you, if a food's not working for you, whether or not a food is okay because, you know, the paleo diet has, you know, changed and continued to develop and evolve over the last few years. So there's things that like, you know, white potatoes that were a complete no on the original paleo diet, but are generally considered, you know, okay as long as you're a person who can handle them now.
For the record, the same person that said paleo was a no also said that canola oil and Diet Coke was yes at the same time. Like, there's fluctuation and change over a long course of time. It's not.
I think
just...
there's been a really big change in exactly how we approach the basic tenets of a paleo diet now. So I think that when the paleo diet was first developed, it was really based, you know, very much on evolutionary biology, anthropology, you know, looking at the paleoanthropological record, looking at modern hunter-gatherers, and splicing together what is an optimal human diet from, you know, here's these really, you know, healthy groups of people and what do they eat. And I think that we've learned a lot more about the role that lifestyle plays and that it's not just about food. And we've learned a lot more about, you know, the, you know, when you look at hunter-gatherers, right, there's such a huge diversity in their diets because they're, you know, the places where they eat, they have different access to different types of food. And starting to look with a broader brush and look at what's common between those diets rather than looking at what's average between those diets. And then also, you know, for me, what I really love, because this is in part, this is my contribution to the discussion, but also I'm not the only one contributing to the discussion this way. But for me, it's about the contemporary science and what contemporary, you know, biology, physiology, you know, biochemistry, microbiology tells us about how compounds in a food interact with the human body and how they promote health or promote illness, you know, based on those interactions. And so the conversation's gotten a lot bigger because it's diet plus lifestyle. So it's looking at things like stress and sleep and activity and circadian rhythms. But it's also gotten a lot bigger in terms of the way that we evaluate whether or not a food is a good food. And I even think that, you know, we've got sort of optimal food, good food, tolerable food, you know, bad food. And I think we've kind of got these more of a gradation in terms of, you know, how we rank a food now. So there's a lot of, you know, what in the olden days were sort of called gray area foods. I'm using air quotes and no one can see me using air quotes again. We really need to think about this video podcast.
No, it's not. I am totally in my jammies.
Just so that people can see just such what a hand talker I am, because I'm a total hand talker. All you would see if we were a video podcast is my hands like waving in front of the camera. But you know, we used to call them gray area foods. And I think now it's more that a lot of these foods are sort of labeled as foods that you can experiment with, foods that are typically well tolerated if you're healthy, typically poorly tolerated if you're not. And so there's this huge expanse of foods in between the definite yeses and the definite noes. And where an individual draws the line really depends on that individual. And so I think talking more about some of these types of concepts and sort of like state of the union paleo diet style, you know, those types of podcasts will be something that we're going to try and infuse into our schedule on a more regular basis, just because the feedback for them has been so overwhelmingly positive. And here's one, we're going to talk about coffee.
Didn't we have like a name for the series before where we did like six of these?
We did, I don't know, was it like Paleo Basics or we did a Paleo 101 series that was a really like intro to paleo, like way back a million years ago. It's probably totally out of date information now.
No, I thought we did a series like while you were writing your book where we just kind of like chatted about different things. And
We did a philosophy series.
Philosophies, that's what it was, yeah.
That definitely touched on a lot of things. But I think that some of the ideas we have now, sort of using a lot of our listener questions and looking at more of these sort of fundamental concepts in the paleo diet, I don't know if it's quite philosophy so much as fundamentals. I like the word fundamentals. We could roll with that. It's going to be something. We're going to think of a name, or maybe we won't even think of a name, and they'll just be these episodes from time to time.
I guarantee you Matt or Monica has already thought up a name, and it's titled something genius.
They've got an infographic for it, and we've got branding already before this even goes live. It's going to be awesome. So let's do Coffee Science with Sarah.
Coffee Talk.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
So coffee is definitely one of these gray area foods. And before I sort of talk about the pros and cons of coffee, I think it's really important to explain what it is that makes an in-between food an in-between food. So when you're evaluating foods from a contemporary science point of view instead of from an evolutionary biology point of view, the way that we do that is we look at what is good in the food and what is going to promote health. So that's generally nutrients. So things like vitamins, minerals, essential amino acids, essential fatty acids, phytochemicals, many of which are antioxidants, all of these things that we know are, you know, the basic resources that our, you know, cells need for every cellular structure within them and for every chemical reaction within them. So we look at the good, right? What is this food going to add to our bodies? And then we look at the bad. So, you know, excessive carbohydrates that are going to spike insulin or inflammatory compounds like, you know, gluten or glycoalkaloids. You know, what does it have in it that may be a problem? And foods that have a lot of good stuff and not very much bad stuff, those are the definite yes foods. So those are, you know, meat and vegetables and seafood and organ meat and, you know, mushrooms and foods like that that have lots of good, not very much, if any, bad. It's an obvious yes. And then there's foods that have really nothing, no redeeming features whatsoever, and lots of problems. So like wheat, right? There's a lot of inflammatory compounds in wheat and almost no nutrition. So it's a really easy no. And then there's this whole range of foods in the middle. And it's not just like they're half yes and half no. Like some are three quarters yes and a quarter no, right? Like maybe grass-fed dairy would be three quarters yes and a quarter no. Like there are some reasons to still be really cautious with that food, and there are some reasons why a lot of people don't react well to it. But provided, you know, you are reacting well, there's some good nutrition. And then there's foods that are maybe like three quarters no and a quarter yes. So maybe something like lentils, which has, you know, especially when it's traditionally prepared, it has some, it does have some nutrients, and it's really high in resistant starch. It's very, very high fiber. And so there may be some good things that can happen out of that. But, you know, overall, it also has a lot of reasons for us to be concerned. It's high in agglutinins. it's, you know, you have to do these really long traditional preparations in order to make the nutrients absorbable. Many people still don't tolerate it, potentially can feed bacterial overgrowth. So there's these other like issues that make it more on the no side. And then there's like, so it's shades. It's the entire spectrum. So where does coffee fall on that spectrum? So let me talk about what is good in it and what is bad in it. And then, you know, that might be able to help our listeners really determine whether or not coffee is going to be a food that they're going to, let's face it, continue to include, because there's not very many of us who don't drink coffee habitually. So the good stuff in coffee is it's actually completely packed with antioxidants and polyphenols. A lot of polyphenols are also antioxidants. So these phytochemicals that have really, really strong antioxidant properties, they're the same phytochemicals that we find in a lot of, you know, fruits and vegetables. That's why fruits and vegetables are linked, or one of the main reasons why fruits and vegetables are linked to reduced risks of disease. And coffee consumption has been, at moderate coffee consumption, has been linked to like a ton of health benefits, like lowering your risk of cancer and stroke and diabetes and cardiovascular disease and depression and cirrhosis and gout and dementia like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. And so I guess Parkinson's is not dementia so much, but Alzheimer's is, but like these neurological diseases. So it's like completely linked to these reduced rates of diseases. So that sounds really great. So there's some things in coffee that are definitely a reason to be extremely cautious with it, and especially for those of us with chronic health conditions, to really put some effort into giving up coffee, at least temporarily. So coffee has some effects on digestion. It stimulates the secretion of the hormone gastrin, which is the main hormone that actually controls the secretion of gastric acid. So it actually, when you drink coffee, you make more stomach acid. For people with low stomach acid out there, that is also, you know, potentially a benefit to coffee to keep in mind, that when you drink it with food, it may actually help digestion. But it not only stimulates the secretion of gastrin, but it also stimulates the secretion of another digestion hormone called cholecystokinin, which stimulates secretion of bile from the gallbladder and digestive enzymes and bicarbonates from the pancreas. So it kind of stimulates like everything that's involved with digestion, the acid, and then everything that goes into the small intestine that helps you digest. So that's one of the reasons why coffee on an empty stomach can be so irritating and give people stomach aches, is because it's stimulating digestion, but there's nothing to digest. And when you stimulate digestion and there's nothing to digest, you can actually really irritate and hurt the lining of the digestive tract, because you basically end up digesting yourself when you've got such a huge pouring of things that digest and nothing for them to work on. That can be a really, really big problem. So that's not an argument against giving up coffee. It's just an argument of having coffee on an empty stomach. But it's also a problem for people with suppressed gallbladder function or suppressed pancreatic function, because then you're producing all this extra stomach acid and you may not be able to keep up with neutralizing that with bicarbonate from the pancreas, or you might not be able to keep up with the signals to the digestion if you don't have, you know, an optimally functioning pancreas or gallbladder. And certainly if you're drinking an excessive amount of coffee, this is one of the ways that we know that coffee can cause damage to the digestive tract, because eventually you just are creating so much acid that you can't keep up. The pancreas just can't keep up with it, even a perfectly healthy pancreas. So again, an argument against having coffee on an empty stomach, and also an argument against drinking more than 2 or 3 cups a day, which is where you sort of hit that cusp of where even if you are otherwise extremely healthy, the coffee can still be extremely irritating and damaging to the gut. But probably the more important negative effect when it comes to coffee is actually the effect of caffeine on cortisol. And caffeine raises cortisol. That's the stress hormone. So it's causing the same effect in your body as stress. And there is an adaptive response. So if you're drinking coffee every day, the amount of cortisol that your body secretes in response to that caffeine will decrease, but it's never the same as zero. So, you know, you'll have this, it'll eventually kind of blunt, that response will blunt a little bit, but you're still secreting some cortisol in response to that coffee every day. So that can cause a huge variety of problems. It's the same kind of problems as chronic stress. And there's a few things that are very worrisome that we know that happen in habitual coffee drinkers. So one is that their cortisol response to like a psychological stressor is way higher than a non-caffeine consumers. So you've got this slightly elevated cortisol that can last up to 6 hours, by the way, as a result of drinking a caffeinated beverage. And then if you get stuck in traffic or, you know, you realize, you know, something doesn't go your way at work, that psychological stress then actually stimulates even more secretion of cortisol than if you didn't drink coffee habitually. And that, when you're talking about people with chronic illness, stress is almost always a factor. So that becomes something that's really important to consider. Now, the obvious question is, well, why not just drink decaf? So what's interesting about decaf is when you actually strip out the caffeine, the decaffeination process strips out also the majority of the antioxidants and the health promoting factors. And so there's some the next sort of property of coffee that is a problem is even more magnified in decaffeinated coffee. And that's that coffee is inflammatory. So we know from studying various populations that people who even drink as little as one cup of coffee every day have increased markers of inflammation in their blood. So they're measuring C-reactive protein and they're measuring pro-inflammatory cytokines like interleukin-6. And so we know that even one cup a day, habitually every day, causes this increase in inflammation. And that's apparent once you adjust for all these other, you know, diet and lifestyle factors, age, you know, sex, weight, exercise, smoking, those types of things. So we know that coffee is inflammatory, and we know that decaf is even more inflammatory than caffeinated coffee. And it's not entirely known. I mean, there's a few chemicals in coffee that are sort of considered the culprits, but there's the definitive mechanism hasn't been figured out. So that is finally a really good argument against habitual consumption of coffee. If you are a person who battles with inflammation, which means if you have any chronic illness, you battle with inflammation, then habitual coffee consumption is not helping you. Throw in the stress response and it's really, really not helping you. And so, you know, overall, I mean, there's a few other, you know, details to coffee that are, you know, important for certain populations to consider. But overall, I mean, those are the main properties of coffee that make it a food that is, you know, while it may have some benefits, there's a lot of reason to be extremely cautious of it. And definitely cautious of habitual consumption. I think that it's very common for us to use coffee as a crutch. And we use it for, I'm guilty of this myself. We don't get enough sleep. So we use it to wake us up in the morning. We're stressed and we're burning out our adrenals. So we use it for a cortisol boost in the morning. And those are classic, you know, it's just the classic, like, you know, dependence on coffee, but it's really because we're not looking after these other lifestyle factors. And if we were, we wouldn't have the same craving for coffee in the morning as we tend to. So it's definitely something to really critically evaluate. And, you know, factors that I would recommend considering when trying to decide if maybe giving up coffee for your New Year's resolution is something that we're going to do is look at sleep quality, look at stress, look at mood, look at chronic illness diagnosis. And if there's some reasons to be concerned in under those categories, then coffee is probably not helping. Yeah, you were about to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you if you could talk a little bit about if someone chooses to replace the caffeine in coffee with something else. So let's say, like, they start drinking black tea, or in my case, I try to drink matcha, which is kind of like lower but has a little bit, like green tea. So I wonder,
with the
kind of benefit.
So it's really interesting. So tea is generally even more packed with antioxidants. So the antioxidants sort of counteract the inflammation in many ways. But the caffeine is, we know that response to caffeine, that cortisol response to caffeine, happens no matter what the source of caffeine. So whether it's coffee or tea or yerba mate or chocolate, or an energy drink, like, it doesn't matter where you're getting the caffeine. That is the response from caffeine. So with tea, you're not getting that gastric acid secretion and the stimulation to the gallbladder and pancreas. So you're not getting that irritation of the digestive tract. So that's one way that tea would be better than coffee. Tea, there's a lot of information, especially with green tea, showing that it can have some potentially really beneficial immune regulating properties, probably through some of its polyphenols. So that's a potential benefit to green tea, especially black tea a little bit more weakly, but tea over coffee. Certainly, you know, so it's potentially a little bit more anti-inflammatory, but that stress response is still a reason to be concerned. So it's still, I would say it's still in the grayscale. It definitely has more pros and fewer cons. But still, for somebody dealing with unmanaged stress, there's some reasons to be very cautious about any source of caffeine.
I think that's helpful for people. And I think too, one of the benefits of, for me personally, like, I no longer drink coffee regularly. I drink coffee, but I enjoy it occasionally, or when I, like, had a really bad night of sleep, I use it as a boost on occasion, rather than feeling like I need it every day. And I would say, like, there's huge benefit to getting over that caffeine hump, the same way that there's benefit of getting off of, like, being addicted to refined carbohydrate. Like, you're going to go through a flu period just the same way you're going to go through caffeine withdrawal, and it's going to be a tough couple of days or maybe even weeks. But then on the other side of that, you're going to function the same way that you do today without the extra stimulant, which will make you healthier. And, you know, I've always thought about it as being kind of a heart healthy choice. You know, it's just better in general for your overall health, like you've given specific examples of.
Agreed. Let's do some questions.
Yeah. Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So our first question is from Sarah. So A, great name. And Sarah says, I've yo-yoed my entire life since preteen. In the last 10 years, between 225 pounds and 170 pounds. I was 225 after baby number two, and through healthy eating and exercise, I now run around 180. I can't seem to get below 178, but understand that with CrossFit, I may be exchanging fat for muscle one-to-one, and I am working on my body image. I'm curvy and strong and will never be a skinny size two, just not built for that, but it's still a hard struggle. Nutrition coach at CrossFit gym took me off coffee. It was a 2 to 3 cup a day habit last November, and I only drank tea, still with caffeine, for about 2 months. I reintroduced coffee because I love the taste and some days feel like I need the pick-me-up. I've read how coffee can be bad and how it can be healthy, and I'm confused. Am I undermining myself? Or is it fine to have 1 to 2 cups a day as long as it's earlier in the day and it doesn't impact my sleep? I don't put any sweetener in it anymore, so it doesn't impact sugar levels, only a splash of heavy cream. P.S. I love your show and listen to it on my early morning walks with my dog. I love how real you are and that you understand that it's not perfect and it's not easy. Stacy, I'm very impressed with your athletic achievements.
Well, thank you. Not only does she have your name, but she complimented us. And that's always a, I think this is probably why you made this topic, just so you could answer her question.
I pretty much just wanted to answer this question because she flattered us, and therefore I created an entire show around it. In fact, I've probably answered most of this question.
Yeah. I would say there's not much for me to kind of add that you haven't already answered in the science segment, although I would say that I think that she already kind of answered her own question by saying, is it fine if I have 1 to 2 cups a day if it's earlier in the day and doesn't affect my sleep? I mean, I personally feel like 2 cups a day would be way too much for me. I find that when I get into a pattern of drinking 1 cup a day for more than 3 days a week, that I take an evaluative look at what I'm doing in my life and what I can do to kind of naturally energize myself. So that usually means nutrient dense foods. And we've talked about, particularly for me, I seem to do really well when I eat foods high in B vitamins, as well as A, E, and C. I don't know, Sarah, I'm sure you can give me the science on why that makes me feel good, but they do. So particularly liver is very energizing for me. I'll make like a big batch of liver mousse if I'm feeling run down. And obviously sleep is really super important. So if you're feeling like you need coffee 1 to 2 cups a day every day, maybe getting an extra half an hour sleep is all that it's going to take for you to feel like you don't need that. If you have the ability, taking a late afternoon or early evening nap, even if it's only on the weekends, can help you through that slump as well. I'm trying to think of some other ways to naturally energize. So also getting up and walking around. I have a friend who does handstands in her office. I tried to do that and someone walked in on me once. It was kind of awkward, but, yep, that happened. I am such the weirdo.
Okay, wait. Were you wearing a skirt that day?
No.
That was good.
Yeah, but my handstand wall is like right behind the door. So they kind of like almost crushed me. Anyway, so yeah, I am such the weirdo in the office. Between taking off my shoes for standing and taking pictures of my food and like all kinds of stuff, I just kind of accepted it. But if you can energize yourself with physical activity, I know, Sarah, you were doing this thing for a while where you had like timers in your phone and you were either meditating or you were doing jumping jacks or you were doing,
I should do that again.
Right? Air squats. Anything you can do to kind of get some blood flowing will have a huge impact on your energy levels. I also find that sometimes, because I like the taste of coffee, I just want it to drink. And so if you're thirsty, quenching your thirst with water or another beverage would be really great. So if you don't like the taste of water, perhaps leaving some like lemon bubbly water in wherever you are at the time that you would normally drink coffee, or having a mug of broth, or having a mug of dandelion root tea, or
Did you see bulletproof broth?
No. Are people adding butter to broth?
People are blending butter or ghee and coconut oil into broth and drinking bulletproof broth.
I can't. Why? Why would we do that? Our broth is already wonderful and rich and flavorful. And if you're making it right, I'm such a negative Nelly. I'm so hardcore about my broth.
I want to try it because I have a gallbladder.
No, maybe that's the other thing is I'm like horrified imagining myself in the bathroom 10 minutes later.
Maybe slight difference between us. So I have a gallbladder. It seems to function relatively normally. I love blending ghee and coconut oil into my coffee. Talking about coffee episode, that's how I drink coffee when I have coffee. I think I would really like it. So I will at some point try it. I've got some really, really nice, pork broth that I made over the weekend.
But Sarah, pork broth is, I mean, like, why don't people not trim off the fat if that's what they're going to do? Like, why don't, okay. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to distract you from.
Now I'm all flustered.
I know, but
So if we're going to talk about the kind of coffee that we drink, another thing that I want to talk about is when we had the Coltons on a long time ago. What was that? Yeah. A year and a half ago?
million years ago.
I'm sure Monica will put a link in the show notes for you. But the Coltons are really interesting people who have done a lot of fascinating research traveling the world and looking at different types of food and food sources. And when their book, Rich Food, Poor Food, came out, we did a show with them and we talked a lot about quote-unquote poor food. And so another thing to consider when you're talking about the kind of coffee that you're drinking is the quality of your coffee. And I don't find it very easy to find quality coffee very often, if not in your own home. And so if you are gonna drink coffee, definitely try to drink organic coffee, because it's one of the highest problematic foods in terms of the poor food scale. And Starbucks doesn't offer an organic option. So if you're going to Starbucks and drinking a cup of coffee every day, you're putting a lot of pesticides and other things in your body, that have been like deepened and developed by the roasting flavor. Like it's, I don't know. I personally like to drink coffee when it's really special and it tastes really good. Like I look forward to going to Pete's Coffee for almond milk lattes. It's like a special thing for me. Or I'll drink like Chameleon cold brew and make an iced coffee with grass-fed cream at home. I just recently tried the Mocha Chameleon. Have you tried that, Sarah?
No, I can't get Chameleon here.
They don't deliver to you?
Oh, I probably could oatmeal order it.
That's how I did it. I ordered online.
Yeah. I can't get it in my local Whole Foods or anything like that. So.
Yeah. So I got the Chameleon, the Mocha, and then I did blend it with Pure Indian Ghee's coffee blend, like, because you can heat the cold brew, and that was really nice. But I can't just like have that in the morning by myself, because as you mentioned, I don't have a gallbladder. So I guess I just have a little different perspective on it between the acid in it without the fat, and then the, like, I can't digest it all by itself with nothing but fat. So I have like a kind of skewed perception on what I would recommend someone else do is try to find more natural ways to energize themselves, drink a cup of broth, I really like brewed cacao. Like you can get, there's a bunch of different brands, and Monica can put them in the show notes too. It's like a caffeine-free way of drinking what I feel like is like a grown-up hot chocolate. And I really like matcha powder, and I really like mugs of broth. So those are the things that I've done to go from drinking 1 to 2 cups of coffee every day to drinking, you know, 3 or 4 cups a week. And I just feel like that's the best solution for me. When I do drink coffee, like if I, you know, I'm at the office and I'm exhausted and I feel like I really need a pick-me-up, I'll have a shot of espresso and I'll kind of make my own Americano instead of a cup of coffee, because the caffeine in that is actually easier on me. So
it's lower. Americano has less caffeine than brewed coffee. All right. It's getting late and I don't want to have coffee in the morning. So let's do one
question. Yuck.
Ha, ha, ha. Let's do one last question, and then we'll call it a show. So this question is from Heather, and Heather says, I do personal training with weights 2 times a week and then 4 to 5 times a week, a wad of CrossFit. I do have coffee with cream every morning and wonder if I drop it, will I see a difference? I've been placed on the lifestyle of paleo per my trainer. I've been pretty good with it for 3 months now, but I am actually gaining weight, 10 pounds, and I'm seeing a large waistline. I'm wondering if I'm eating too much of something or not enough. My caloric intake is around 2,000 a day. What would you recommend to take some of the bulk out in the belly?
So you have this here for cortisol. Do you just want to answer that?
Oh, yeah, I'm just like, I'm literally like chomping at the bit.
I could feel it.
Can you
from
feel
Georgia.
It? Can you feel me like, I'm like, please just pass the question on to me, because gaining weight on a paleo diet, especially when you're doing a lot of lifting type training, is not necessarily such a strange thing. You know, you're putting on muscle, you're eating a nutrient dense diet, which also means that changes your metabolism. And when you first change from a more nutrient depleted to a nutrient dense diet, often the body will sort of hold on to extra calories until you've restored nutrient status, and then it will kind of let go of that weight. But if you're seeing it around the waistline, that is a classic stress response. coffee is not doing you any favors in that situation. And that probably also means that you're overtraining. And it, you know, because it, I mean, it's 2 times a week plus 5 times, that's every day. That's weights every day. That's a lot. So between the stress and the cortisol response of doing that much exercise, and then also, you know, coffee every day and how that can add to stress, and then what other stressors are going on in Heather's life, like that would be the first place that I would look before I would look at calories. 2,000 calories a day for somebody who's that active is probably a perfectly good place to be. But looking at the stress and looking at, you know, recovery days, rest days, less coffee, meditation, maybe instead of a WOD, go for a walk or do yoga or something that's going to be a lot more psychologically meditative and reducing stress would be where I would go with that. Cool question.
I would say from a like non-paleo training perspective, there is some evidence that having caffeine before training will increase your lifting ability. And so there's a lot of people that are in my sport that take pre-workout that has an extremely high amount of caffeine in it. And I would just make everybody think about the fact that if you regularly train with a pre-workout to give you that extra boost, then you're never giving yourself the opportunity when you compete or you really want to hit a PR to have that extra boost. So, you know, I've always considered it when I see people who drink a lot of coffee and train a lot and they are taking the pre-workouts. Like, I've literally seen someone, Sarah's going to like hold, are you sitting down, Sarah?
No, I'm standing at my standing desk.
They chugged a whole bottle of Chameleon before working out.
What?
And I was like, had a conversation with them about how that was not actually a great idea because there was like way too much caffeine for that to be good for them. And they're, so from, if you have that gym mentality, I would just encourage you to think that although not doing pre-workout for a few weeks is going to suck because you're not going to have that same like ramped up edgy boostiness right beforehand, once you kind of normalize and get back to your body normalcy being what you work out with, then, you know, if you really do take it seriously and you compete, then using that as a, you know, boost for when you really, really want to do well, you'll actually see a difference rather than feeling like you need it all the time and you're jonesing for it. Because caffeine is addictive. I mean, it's one of the things we haven't really talked about is it is incredibly addictive. And so the more you allow yourself to have something regularly, the more you create a problem of that addiction. And then you can't use it to the ways that it could possibly benefit you. So that's kind of the mentality that I've had to take with it. And, you know, from a weightlifting perspective, I'm one of the only people who doesn't do that sort of stuff. My friend and trainer and other podcast co-host Viv also doesn't. And we constantly are kind of baffled at some of the things that people do before they work out. And we're like, you know, if that's what works for you, maybe evaluate if that's, you know, a good long-term solution to achieving your goals, because I can't see that amount of caffeine while you're also putting strain on your heart with carrying a lot of muscle and putting heavy weight on your body. You know, that's asking a lot for your system to handle.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm still stuck on a bottle of Chameleon cold brew.
I knew, that's why I was like, hold on to your standing desk, Sarah.
That's intense. So hopefully this episode was food for thought. Pardon the pun, coffee for thought.
Twice in 5 minutes.
I'm getting
You're
tired.
You're so punny.
I'm so punny. Is that really a word? Punny.
Now it is.
It is now. Hashtag Sarah's punny. So hopefully that was food for thought and people can take that information away and more critically evaluate coffee consumption in their lives. And if you liked the more sort of basic paleo type type topics. We'd love some feedback. Feel free to comment on the show notes, which are posted on both of our blogs, paleoparents.com and thepaleomom.com. And of course, we love it when you leave reviews on iTunes and let us know what you think.
Yes, if people could leave reviews on iTunes, that'd be really, really great. And tell your friends too. I mean, I was surprised some of the people that we met on tour and stuff didn't know that we did a podcast. I mean, some people like knew that we did a podcast.
Some people only knew that we did the podcast and were kind of a little bit like
awesome. We'll say they were awesome because we don't want some.
I love meeting podcast fans because they're people who like really feel like they do really know us because we're probably more personal about our daily lives on the podcast than we are in most other places. So they really like know us very, very well. And it was cool. It's cool to meet people who, it's a little bit weird to meet people who know you so well and you don't know them at all.
But I feel like we could be totally friends because if they love us, then it's just because we don't know them that we're not. But yes.
Right. Exactly.
So my point is that if people were coming to our book tour and didn't know that we had a podcast, then certainly the word can still be spread. So if there's particular episodes that you love that you think would be helpful for someone, especially, you know, it's the holidays, people are thinking about New Year's resolutions. We've got 2+ years of shows on this podcast in terms of, you know, 2 years we've done New Year's resolution shows. We've done Paleo 101. I think we did Paleo 102. We've done the philosophy shows. Now we're doing these back to basic shows. There's a lot of individual episodes that you could send a link to your friend and say, hey, you might enjoy listening to this. You know, if they don't have a gallbladder, put on the gallbladder show. If they just got pregnant, give them a pregnancy show. If they have an autoimmune condition, we've got plenty of shows on that, you know. So I would just say the more you can, again, like we discussed earlier, spread the good food word and put the reviews out there so other people can be encouraged to listen. Those are the kinds of things that really paleo it forward, and we appreciate it as well as, you know, appreciate the opportunity to reach more people and try to help improve the lives of others.
You know what you just did there?
No.
You totally just branded it as the Back to Basics show. You totally just did that, and that was awesome branding, and I'm pretty sure Monica already has an infographic.
Woot woot.
That's our another long show. We really need to stop these long shows. We will keep them to an hour more regularly in the future as part of my New Year's resolutions.
There was about 5 minutes of us pre-chatting.
Okay, so we're only 15 minutes over then. So thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Hey! Hello. Hello, hello. Hello. Can you hear me? Am I, like, accidentally muted?
No, that's me. That's me being muted.
We're off to a rockin' start.
I was like, hello, hello, how many times are we going to do this? And you're like, hello? And I was like, oh, she can't hear me at all.
Oh, I bet that was an amusing little bit had I been actually able to hear it. And then we could have done our little, like...
Had anybody been able to hear both sides?
Right. Yeah. Someone can. It's recorded for posterity, I'm sure.
No, I don't think it records when I'm on mute.
Oh, well, that's probably desirable now that I think about it. You would want it to not record when you're on mute. Yeah, that totally makes sense, actually, come to think of it. Someone was really clever when they designed that. I'm ready to rock this.
You're not just ready, you're ready to rock it.
Right.